who got Rishi Shalom, covenant of peace, Pinchas, for what? For killing Christians on Jewish Monday. So peace is not necessarily something that is passive. Sometimes it's very active and sometimes even violent. But peace, Shalom, means perfection. Perfection is only brought about by a team effort, by a group effort. There's nothing that is perfect except for the Ribbono Shel Olam in itself. Perfection in this world is brought about by many, many different things working together. And therefore, Shalom is not the domain of any one person or one type of thing. It's the domain of many, many different things brought together. That is on every level of existence. It says that when the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world, every day he saw the things that he created and he said they were good. Vayar Elokim ki tov. On the sixth day he looked at everything he created and Vayar Elokim ki tov v'es kol asher asa v'hineh tov ma'od. Says the Sfarno, what transformed all these good things into something very good? And now there's a lot of good things. Why is it very good now? Before I tell you what the Sfarno says, I'll give you a marshal to what he says. Take an automobile and tear it apart into its components. Where I live, they do that often. So if you have now a automobile with all of the components strewn on your lawn, each part has a function. And you can use it. You can use the horn for a musical instrument. You can use the tires for a float at the beach. You can use the seats for furniture, the spark plugs to light a fire. You can use the gas tank to store liquids and so on. Each component is good. But when you put them all together and they form a functioning automobile, that's very good. The automobile is better than the sum total of its parts. So too, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, each component of the creation is good. It has a function. But when they all work together in harmony to create a functioning universe, that's very good. So on the physical level, there's only perfection if things work together, and things that are very, very much different, fire and water, have to work together. That makes Shamayim. On the social level, same thing. If everybody in this world would be doctors, we'd have a very healthy world, but who would take out the garbage? And if everyone were garbage men, we'd have a very clean world, but who would heal the sick? So in order for society to reach any kind of perfection, you need a lot of different occupations. People doing all different kinds of things. And the Ribbono Shel Olam created people with a predilection towards different things, and therefore the world is taken care of. But any one thing by itself can't bring the world to perfection in a society, from a society standpoint. And it applies also to the spiritual world. We pride ourselves that we received the Torah with 613 mitzvahs. That is a myth. No one could ever fulfill 613 mitzvahs. Not because it's too difficult. It's impossible. Because there's certain mitzvahs that are only for Kohanim. So if you're a Kohen, you'll tell me you have 613 mitzvahs. Not true. Because there's certain mitzvahs that are only for non-Kohanim. A Kohen will never fulfill the mitzvah pinyin aben as a father. He's exempt from that mitzvah. There's certain mitzvahs that are only for men. No woman could ever fulfill those mitzvahs. And yet there are certain mitzvahs that are only for women. At least in my lifetime, I'm hoping no man will ever bring the sacrifice after childbirth. That is not a man's mitzvah. It's a woman's mitzvah. So unless you're a Kohen, Levi, Israel, man and woman wrapped into one, which today may be possible, under normal circumstances it was not, you can't have 30 mitzvahs. So what is this idea of 613 mitzvahs? The idea is very simple. We didn't receive the Torah as individuals. We receive the Torah ke'ish echad b'leib echad. And one person with one heart, as a unit, conglomeration called Klal Yisrael. And each of us is a part of that unified, perfect unit. And each one has their mitzvahs. And that's how perfection is reached. It's a group effort. It's not the effort of any individual. And it's different. Different parts contribute different things, and everybody together then reaches towards perfection. In fact, that is the entire purpose of the Torah. So says the Gemara in Yevamos, and the Rambam brings it down in the end of Hilchos Chanukah. Lo nitna ha-Torah ella lahavi shalom la'olam. The Torah was given to bring peace to the world. Again, peace means harmony, perfection. And the Torah gives out the various roles that each one is supposed to play towards that perfection. And therefore, Talmidei Chachamim, people who proliferate Torah, Mardim Shalom Ba'olam, that's their purpose, is to bring this kind of Shalom and Shleimus perfection to the world, to guide how each individual can do their part with their unique capabilities, abilities, and talents to be part of that perfection of the world. And that is, in fact, what we say when we say Shalom Aleichem. The Gemara says that someone who says, who greets someone, Shalom, it's a, he gets extra long life. And the Maharal says because it's a sign of humility to say Shalom, to initiate the greeting. And the person who does not answer the greeting is guilty of theft. He's stealing from the other person what you can steal from a poor person. That's what the Gemara says. What does it mean? And why talk it that we greet each other? One says Shalom Aleichem, the other one says Aleichem Shalom. Why not just say Shalom Aleichem twice? There are many answers. But I think the idea is the following. Shalom Aleichem means my shleimus, my perfection depends on you. It's a very humble statement. Right? I need you. I can't do it on my own. No matter how great and how talented I may be, I'm only a part. And I need your part to make me more perfect. I admit that I am not perfect without you. Shalom Aleichem. My shleimus depends on you. Now, if the other one would answer, Shalom Aleichem, it's like ping pong. No, 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 my shleimus depends on you. It's meaningless. The other one accepts, you're right, your perfection depends on me. But my perfection depends on you too. Aleichem Shalom. It's not throwing it back, it's accepting it and reciprocating. And that's why a person who does not answer, who does not respond, is stealing the self-respect of the first person. I admit that I need you, but you don't admit you need me. So you're stealing from me my self-esteem and my self-respect. And that's why in the time of Boaz, they instituted to greet each other b'shem Hashem. Shalom is one of God's names, perfection. Because that was a time when Ish HaYosher Ve'Einov Yaseh, everybody did what they thought was right. They didn't take into consideration that they're part of a conglomerate and they have to consider other people because I can't do it on my own. I need other people. When everybody thinks they can do whatever they think is right and not take into consideration how it affects other people and how other people affect them, then you need people to make that statement, Shalom Aleichem, my perfection depends on you and yours depends on me. The start with an easier part of this. How do you look at peace with wicked people? Okay. Start with the wicked people who are really wicked from a standpoint of society, real Rishoyim, okay, Hitler, okay, I think everybody would agree, was a Rosh. There's a halacha that with those kind of people, right, getting rid of them from this world is a mitzvah. Okay, you can understand if you have a sniper standing on top of a building killing innocent people and there's no other way of stopping him, then to bring perfection to the world is to shoot. Get rid of it. I don't think anybody, unless you belong to the ACLU, would disagree with that. Right? That seems to be a person who would have killed Hitler in the middle of World War II would have been a hero not a murderer. People understand that. How about a more subtle kind of Rasha? A person who's disseminating apikursis, disseminating that which is detrimental from a spiritual standpoint. So Chazal say that Godl hamachtio yosef min aharmon. It is worse to make a person sin than to kill them, because killing them only kills them this world. Making them sin and taking them away and putting them off the derech takes them away from this world and the next world. And therefore we had more of a problem with Midian than we had Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim were not allowed to hurt, to hate, because they harmed us physically, but not spiritually. Midian harmed us spiritually. Then we had to take revenge on them. So, therefore, it would seem that somebody, the halacha is, that if somebody is an out-and-out apikoros, he is disseminating total heresy and taking people away from what is right and proper Torah-wise, that molid v'lomayl, that the halacha is that if you can somehow cause that person's death, it's a mitzvah. Even the Gemara gives you an example. Person's drowning in a well, and there's a ladder. You come by and you see this heretic drowning in the well, and you say to him, look, my kid's kite got caught up in a tree. I need the ladder. But don't worry, I'll be back in 2 weeks with the ladder, tread water. And that way, you know, you're not really killing him outright, but he's not going to be around in 2 weeks. Mitzvah to do that. Don't get scared, because that mitzvah doesn't apply today. Says the Chazon Ish. Tell me 1 second more. Chazon Ish says that mitzvah applied when people understood that a person standing on a building with a machine gun and gunning down people is exactly the same as somebody spewing heresy, right, and causing people to sin. And they could see it. It was in a time when mitzvahs and averas were the cause of tragedy in this world, and you could see the correlation. So then it was clear, this person is killing people, this person is killing people. Today we don't see that. Not at all. Today you don't make that correlation. We don't see the correlation between mitzvahs, averas, tragedies, everything seems to be coincidence and happenstance. Today, I'll tell you how we see it, even people who know this halacha. In the 1970s, I think it was, before the Tshuva movement became a big fad in the world, there was a young man in Detroit who became a Baal Tshuva. And he had grown up in a conservative temple. And after he became frum, he went back to his conservative temple on Shabbos and shot the rabbi dead during his sermon. I'm always afraid that's going to happen to me sometime. Somebody called a bot in. But in any case, maybe the rabbi was speaking too long. But he had a... Now, and he did it because this rabbi was misleading people. Now, what is our reaction to that? That was a nut. And obviously, he was deranged. Right? Nobody looks at it as if he killed some kind of sniper. There's a very big difference in our mind between somebody who is spewing spiritual bullets and somebody spewing physical bullets. And no matter how much you believe and how much you could say, our gut reaction is the guy was deranged. So therefore, doing that today, killing heretics, is not going to bring a Kiddush Hashem. It's not going to bring more righteousness to the world. It's going to bring more Chilul Hashem. So therefore the Chazon Ish says it doesn't apply to them, because it's not going to have the effect that it's supposed to have. But in a time when people could equate spiritual bullets with physical bullets, then it was a mitzvah to do such a thing. Today, in the world we live in, since the Churban Beis HaMikdash, when there's Hester upon him, it's impossible to make that equation. However, that is not the first line of action. It's the last line of action. There's other famous Gemara that Reb Meir had some hooligans in his neighborhood, and they gave him a lot of trouble. and he used to daven they should die. His wife, Ruria, heard him davening, and she said, you know, I think there's a better way of doing this. It doesn't say Yitamu Choltim Min Ha'aretz, but Yitamu Chatoyim Min Ha'aretz. Why get rid of the sinners? Better to get rid of the sins. So instead of davening these people should die, why don't you daven they do tshuva? And then these people will be alive, and the problem will be solved, and it will be solved in a much nicer way. So Rav Meir listened to her, and he davened they should do tshuva, and they did tshuva in the end. Much nicer way of getting rid of evil instead of getting rid of the evildoers. And in fact, I think that's what the Rav Yaakov Emden means in the following. It says that Birmas Haminim, Kalam Alshinim, was composed in Yavne, the Gemara says. The Yavne Tiknua. Simple meaning, Yavne was where the Sanhedrin was in the time of Rabbi Gamliel, and that's where they composed Birchas Haminim. They added a Baruch the Shmon Esrei. Says of Yaakov Emden, Yavne is the acronym for Yayin B'Somnin Ner Havdolah. Yavne, right? That's the order of Havdolah. Yayin B'Somnin Ner Havdolah. Now what in the world does Birchas Haminim have to do with the Brachos of Havdolah? Thinking, the idea is the following. Sometimes you have to separate yourself from evil people, whether they're physically evil, spiritually evil, but that's not the first line of action. First line of action is yayin. Sit down, have a little lechayim with them, gobble the gima, maybe you can makarev them through eating together. Right? Some people are affected by the gastronomic part of Yiddishkeit. You know, sit down, have a little more malka, whatever. It brings people together. No. If that doesn't work, then the summon. That's more the aesthetic idea of Yiddishkeit. Right? There's the emotional, that's the wine. And then there's the summon. Show them the nice aroma of Yiddishkeit. Show them how beautiful Jewish family life is and so on. Maybe that will affect them. Try that. Not everybody's affected the same way. If that doesn't work, then there's a nair. Enlighten them. Some people are brought closer intellectually. Show them the intellectual beauty of what Yiddishkeit is. If you tried all of that and nothing works, then Havdolah. Then separate yourself. But don't separate yourself to begin with. Try in every way to do it in a way that you don't have to make that separation, and only as a last resort that you separate yourself from these people. Now we come to a more difficult kind of shalom. Shalom between people who we have a lot in common with, but are from a different chug. Right, a different segment of religious Jewry. How do you deal with them? So I'll tell you first how we should deal with them, and then reality, and why the reality is like that. Somebody once came to the Chofetz Chaim, and he said to him, you know, why are there so many different kinds of Jews? Sfardim, Ashkenazim, Hasidim, Misnagdim, Modern Orthodox, ultra-Orthodox, all different kinds of groups, right? Wouldn't it be better if everybody was one way? They all dressed the same way, they all pronounced Hebrew the same way, they all had the same minhagim. It'd be much more streamlined. Yiddishkeit would be much more simple, not so complicated. So the Chofetz Chaim, well, first of all, it doesn't say in the story what way he was referring to, but I'll tell you his way. He meant everybody should be like me. Chofetz Chaim said, why are you asking me that question? Go ask the Tsar why he has so many different divisions in his army. He has the infantry, the cavalry, the air force, the navy. Everyone has their uniform. Everyone has a different function. Wouldn't it be better if everybody was in one division? Same uniform, same division, everybody in the cavalry, everybody in the infantry, and that's it. A much more streamlined army. You know what the Tsar will tell you, he said? He'll tell you, yeah, the army would be much more streamlined, much more simple. I never win a war. have to cover all bases to win a war. So too, we are the army of the Ribon Shalom. And in order to be able to fulfill our mission, we need a lot of different divisions. This kind of Jew and that kind of Jew, and each one serves a function, and together, that's what Klal Yisrael is. Chafetz Chaim, I saw that Rabbi Akiva Eger already said this way before the Chafetz Chaim, explains the Gemara at the end of Taimus. I always like to say that if we fulfill what this idea is, it will be the end of all Taimios. We're not the fast anymore. The Gemara says over there, Lashid Lavo HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to make a great dance for all the tzaddikim, a big circle. And he's going to sit in the middle, and they're all going to point to the middle, Zeh Elokeinu Kivinu Lo. This is the God that we waited for. So Kiveger says, sounds like Romper Room. This is what Olam Haba is, everybody dancing around the Ribon Hashem. What does it mean? So what it means is the following. In this world, there are many, many different kinds of tzaddikim. There are tzaddikim who emphasize learning Torah. They also daven, they also are involved in chesed, but their emphasis is Torah learning. Amongst them, there are countless different approaches to Torah learning. In the Litvisha world, there's a Telzer Derech and a Brisker Derech and a whatever. That's just Litvaks. Then there's a Polish way of learning, and a Hungarian way of learning, and a Taimani way of learning. And then in each of these different droplets of learning, some people learn Tanakh, and some people learn Gemara, and some people learn Halacha, some people learn Pilpul, some people learn fast and slow and shallow and deep, all different approaches. So if you take all the different permutations and combinations, just for the people who emphasize Torah, there's a tremendous amount of different approaches. Then there are people who emphasize Davening. They learn Torah, and they do Chesed, but their main thing is Avodah, Davening. Some daven fast, some daven loud, some daven low. This musaf, a different musaf, also many, many different approaches. And some tzaddikim emphasize chesed. They learn and they daven, but their emphasis is chesed. So this one has a group of chesed for kiruv, and this one has chesed for widows and orphans and sick people and all different kinds of chesed organizations. And everybody thinks that their approach is the bullseye. And everybody else is out in left field somewhere, at best. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the future is going to put all these people in a big circle. And you could have a tzaddik over here and a tzaddik 180 degrees, diametrically, a different approach completely. But as long as all these tzaddikim are on the circle, it's possible to be off the circle. Meaning, they all believe in Torah Shabbat and Torah Shabbat Peh, and the 13 animamins, and they're on the circle. Then the Ribon Hashem's in the middle, and all of the paths are equidistant from the circle, from this center. This one may be 180 degrees from this one, but from the Ribon Hashem, they're all equal. That's what the Ribon Hashem is showing. Somebody once told me, it doesn't say a circle. It says machol. Machol is a dance. In the future, everybody's going to dance around that circle and experience what everybody else experienced. In this world, you have to have a derech. And you have to be somewhere on that circle. But you should realize that all the other people on the circle, as long as they're on the circle, are equidistant from the Ribon Hashem. And that doesn't mean that everybody's derech is perfect. Everybody needs a little musr, tochacha, a little correction. Maybe they have a few toes off the circle. So everybody has a responsibility to give musar and tokacha to others and to accept it themselves. Right? If you're in the Navy and I'm in the Air Force, we're both fighting for the same army, for the same cause. Right? I do my part, you do your part. I may criticize and say, you're not doing your part in the Air Force the way it should be. And you can criticize and tell me that I'm not doing my part in the Navy. But we're not mabakel each other. Right? Except because we're in this together and we respect each other, I want you to do your best job and I should do my best job. You tell me what criticism you have, I'll tell you what I criticism I have. It's interesting that the holiday, which is most representative of Achdus, of camaraderie and unity, is the holiday of Purim. Yeah, Purim is... is Achdus, Mereus, send Shalach Manos in order that people should feel connected. Yet Purim is the only holiday. You can't really relate this here. In Eretz Yisrael, you can see it openly. It's the only holiday in the year that all Jews don't separate, celebrate on the same day. Some on the 14th and some on the 15th. Isn't that strange? That the holiday of Achdus is a holiday that not everybody celebrates on the same day? But that's exactly the point. Achdus does not mean doing the same thing that somebody else is doing. Everybody doing the same. That's called cloning. Achdus is being able to tolerate someone who's not doing the exact same thing to you, but they're doing it for the same reason. They're keeping the 14th the same reason you're keeping the 15th. But you're doing it differently because that's the way that it has to be. Even more than that. Once was aroused to this idea by a maisa that happened of what Shalach Manos is all about. When I first came to Eretz Yisrael, our kindergarten teacher in Matityahu was a Moroccan woman who had a very difficult life. A young woman, she was married and divorced, and she remarried, she had children, and finally she had her first child, a boy. So the entire Moshav attended the bris, which happened to be Yerushalayim. And then came the Pidyon HaBen. The Pidyon HaBen she was having by her parents in Kiryat Gat, which at that point to me could have been the end of the world. I have no idea where Kiryat Gat was. And getting there was a tremendous problem, but she begged me, please come to the Pidyon HaBen. So I went, and before I went, one of the people who had come before me to Eretz Yisrael called me aside. He says, Rabbi, be very careful what you eat at this Pidyon HaBen. So I said, why? I know the family. Their standards of kashrus are fine. What's the problem? He said, no, they're not kashrus. They're Moroccans. And Moroccans love to eat hot, spicy food. And you're an American. And even though there's a little olive that separates between Amerikoi and Morokoi, you are not going to be able to stomach that food. So be very, very careful what you eat. So took that to heart, more to stomach. And when I got there, I went over to the mother, and I said, look, I've been warned that you Moroccans eat spicy food that we Americans really can't stomach. So I want you to do me a favor. And each course that's served, I'm going to look over to the women's section to you. And if it's really hot and spicy, I want you to point down to it, and I'm not going to leave it alone. She said, no. You are the guest of honor here, and we know that you Americans don't like hot, spicy foods, so we have made everything bland in your honor. Felt great. On the other hand, everybody's cursing me because they have bland food because of me. But okay, at least I can eat. So they served the first course, which was some fish with some red sauce on it. And I look around, and I see, fuck, everybody's eating it like it's water. So I took a mouthful of this, and then I realized my tongue had already disintegrated. That was it. And my reflex action was to swallow it, and I saw my whole life, this is not an exaggeration, go before me. I realized within seconds, that's it, my entire insides are going to be burned out like Nodav and Avihu. I pictured my body being sent back to my wife and children, and I really had a very, very sad feelings of knowing that that's it, I died at this Pidyon HaBen. And I must have drunk a liter of water at all down at once for a pitcher. And they're all looking at me and they're saying, it's bland. I learned from that not everybody has the same taste in food. And what's bland to one person may be very hot to another person. And that's the idea of Shalach Manos. Everybody has their style of Purim Suda. I guarantee you a Moroccan Purim Suda is not like an American Purim Suda, and a Chinese Jewish Purim Suda is not like a Southern American, South American Purim Suda. It's all different. Everybody has their style. But you have to be able to accept two things in somebody else's style and incorporate that in your meal. That's Achdus. Achdus is being not changing your way, but being able to tolerate somebody else's way to incorporate that by you. That's what Achdus is really all about. So why don't we live like that? Why can't we realize that there could be many, many different kinds of Jews who dress differently, who have different kinds of yarmulkes and different minhagim, and even different halachas, right, and different hashkafas. And I may criticize and feel that you're not 100% the way you should be, but you're on the circle. So I'll give you mussar out of love, because we're all in this together, and you'll give me mussar, and we can accept it. Why is it that everybody feels that all the people who are not exactly like them, right, are just out of the pale completely? The Adjadekach, that when I first came to Eretz Yisrael, just to show you how polarized things are there, getting like that here too. When I first came to Eretz Yisrael, so being an American, a lot of Israelis were fighting over me, whose camp I'm going to be in. Because there everything is politics too, so it's votes, so you know. So one person told me that, pulled me aside, a woman, a teacher, she said, you should know, Eretz Yisrael is not like Chutzlanders. Anybody who wears a black yarmulke in Eretz Yisrael is anti-social, anti-Israel, anti-everything, right? And that's what a black yarmulke represents over here. I said, you know, this is before virtual reality. I said, it's very hard for me to believe it. Just be putting on a black yarmulke makes you, what's it called, think and feel like that. Hard for me to accept that. No, she said, 100%, that's the way it is. Okay. Then one of my children came home from Cheder. He must have been about 9, 10 years old. And he said, our Rebbe told us today that anyone who wears a kippah sruga, a knitted yarmulke, can't be a Yirei Shamayim. Impossible. Why? Because a Yirei Shamayim escapes through the holes. So I didn't want to contradict his Rebbe, but I didn't want my son to think that that was true. So I told him, I said, Shlomi, you know, I was in Meir Shorim last week, and all of the Toldos Aharon, the Baruch Hasidim, wear big white knitted yarmulkes. Are you going to tell me not one of the Baruch Hasidim is a Yirei Shamayim because the Yirei Shamayim escaped through the holes? He said, well, maybe there's exceptions. I said, look, let's leave it at that. Maybe it's not the yarmulke that determines who, what a Yirei Shamayim person has or not. It's what's under the yarmulke. So as long as you know there's exceptions, you always have to find out. Maybe this is the exception. But that's the way people look, right? On both sides. So what's the problem? Why is it like that? So I'll tell you, and the truth is that because it's like that, we're no different than the door of the Bayis Sheni, and that's why the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Shina Shinam. The Tzid says in his Hakdama to Sefer Bereishis, to Hemigdama, there's a Hakdama, says Sefer Bereishis is called Sefer Hayosha, because the Avos Hakdoshim were Yesharim. They were straight. Aside from being frum, they also were straight people, Yesharim, righteous people. So once the people of Bayis Sheni were very frum, they were tzaddikim, he says, and they were long de Torah, but they weren't Yesharim. Why? Because everybody felt that if somebody else doesn't serve the Rabban Shem exactly as I do, it's a little bit different, but he's an apikoros. And it's a mitzvah to hate apikoros, like he said. Sometimes even mitzvah to kill him. So everybody was hating everybody else and killing them, Hashem Shamayim, because they're not exactly like me. And that's what caused the destruction of the Second Beis HaMikdash. Not too much different than today, where everybody looks at everybody else and you're exactly the way that I think, then you're an apikoros. Not everybody's an apikoros, so you're different than me. Could be, again, that you need some mussar and tochacha, but it's not that you're an apikoros. But that's the way it is. Why is it like that? Let me tell you what I think. At least one of the contributing factors, and then maybe we can understand how to correct it. The Kotzko Rebbe said two things that are relevant to this topic. He said, the first one he said in Yiddish. In English it doesn't sound so good, and in Yiddish I'd break my teeth, but I have too many more left anyway, so I'm going to say it in Hebrew. He said the following, Im ani ani, mitnei sha'ani ani, v'ato ato, mitnei sha'ato ato, אז אני ואתה אתה. אבל אם אני מפני שאתה אתה, ואתה אתה מפני שאני, אז אין אני ואין אתה אתה. Meaning the following. If I know who I am, I'm me because I'm me. I know who I am. And you're you because you know who you are. Then we both have identities. I'm me and you're you. But if I'm me only because I know I'm not you, I don't know who I am, but I know I'm not you. And you're you only because you don't know, only because you know you're not me. You don't know who you are, but you know you're not me. Then neither of us have an identity. That I'm not me and you're not you, because a negative identity is not an identity. First. Second thing. The Kotzker Rebbe explained the Gemara. The Gemara says, Binyan the Orim Stira, and Stira Zekain in Binyan. Simple meaning is, when youngsters, immature people build, sometimes their building is destroyed. And when wise people destroy, that's called building. He said it a little differently. He says, Binyan the Orim, you know how foolish people build themselves up? By knocking other people down. They don't change themselves. They don't pick themselves up. They knock somebody else down, so they're a little higher now. But Zakenim, wise people, right, knock other people down by building themselves up. They don't have to knock other people down. They build themselves up. And the Mela, what's not right, is pushed to the wayside. They do it in a positive way. The other ones do it in a negative way. Added to that, one more story. Rabbi Tversky, in one of his books, gives the following anecdote. He said there was once a person who only could identify himself by his clothing. And he was afraid that if he'd take off his clothing, he'd forget who he was. So he was terrified about going into a mikvah. Comes Erev Yom Kippur, he has to go to the mikvah. So he said, look, I don't want to forget who I am, so I'm going to tie a red string around my finger. And when I see the red string, I remember who I am. So he went into the mikveh, and the red string got separated from his finger and got wound around somebody else's finger. Comes out of the mikveh, he's looking at the other guy's finger with the red string. He's thinking and thinking. He says, look, I know who you are. Who am I? Sometimes we identify ourselves by the externals. What kind of yarmulke you wear, what kind of, all different kind of external things. And we don't really appreciate who we are. We don't know who we are. And we can only identify ourselves by the way that we dress, and that is not really definitive and an identity at all. And usually we educate our children because of that, not to know who they are, but to know who they're not. We don't do this, we are not like this, but who are we? What's your Masorah? Who are your Gedolim? Who are the people you follow? If you're on the circle, you have to have some kind of Masorah. You have to have some kind of Masorah. You have to have some kind of leaders that you follow and have some background to what it is. If you can be proud of who you are and know why you do what you are, then you don't have to knock other people down to feel secure. But if you don't know who you are and your identity is only who you're not, then you're very insecure. And if somebody else is different, you have to knock them down in order to make yourself feel secure. And that's what happens. We identify ourselves by the externals instead of identifying ourselves by what really is significant. And if you only identify yourself by externals, then you feel very threatened by other people who are not exactly the same externally. The Chafetz Chaim tells a story for a different purpose. It fits our purpose too. So there was once a person who was driving a wagon. Snowstorm, he couldn't go on. 2-3 o'clock in the morning, he stops at an inn. He begs the innkeeper, give me a bed for a few hours. I just got to sleep for 2-3 hours and then be on my way. The innkeeper says, I'm sorry, there's not an empty bed in the place. He says, there must be an empty bed somewhere you have. He said, yeah, there's one room that has two beds, but there's a general in the room, and I promised him I wouldn't put anybody else in the room. He said, look, the general's fast asleep. He's not going to get up till 7-8 o'clock in the morning. I only want to sleep now from 3 to 5. I'll go in quietly. I'll leave quietly. The general will never know I was there. I'll pay you double for the room. I said, okay, but you have to promise me that when I come in at 5 to wake you up, you'll get out of there quietly and the general will never know you were there. Right. So sleeps for 2 hours, innkeeper comes in, wakes him up, he gets up really fast, dresses fast, runs out of the room. As he's going out of the room, he passes by a mirror in the hall, and he sees that he's wearing the general's clothing. He says, that idiot innkeeper, he woke up the general, forgot to wake me up. Just because you're dressed like the general, says the Chofetz Chaim, does not mean you're the general. That does not make you what you are. Right? There's something more significant. I always find that the way people look, right, that it's the clothing, whatever it may be. Again, it's the people told me what the black yarmulke is, and the other people told me what the knitted yarmulke is. It's on all sides. If you think that is what makes the person, then people shouldn't daven by the kosher, because that's not the holiest place to daven. They should go to my dry cleaners, right? Because there's all these sprung clothing, and there's nobody in it to mar it. That's the place you should daven, because that's what people consider important. So if we really know who we are, we learn and be proud of our own Masorah. And again, there's nothing wrong with people giving Musar and Tochacha that maybe this Masorah needs a little bit of correction, and this one needs, everybody needs some correction. But not because I consider you a nothing. I consider you out of the pale of what Yiddishkeit is. Because I consider you're part of everything, you're part of another division of this army, and you have to function properly just as much as I do, so you tell me what I can correct, I'll tell you what you have to correct. And we'll do it out of love and respect, not out of bickering. That's the way it really should be. And that's the difference between machlokis l'shem shamayim and machlokis shelo l'shem shamayim. Machlokis l'shem shamayim is sofa l'skayim. And machlokis shelo l'shem shamayim is ain't sofa l'skayim. They say facetiously, that if people know they're arguing and it's not l'shem shamayim, there's a hope that the machlokas will stop. But if people think they're doing it l'shem shamayim, they'll never stop. That machlokas will never end. But that's not what it really means. What it means is, the Meiri says, machlokas shelo l'shem shamayim means everybody wants to win, and only one person can win. So it's people arguing against each other. Machlokas l'shem shamayim is like Hillel and Shammai, arguing with each other. I have my opinion, you have your opinion. What I'm interested in is the truth. I don't care if it's my way or your way, but I want to know what the truth is. And we'll argue it out until we'll come to the truth, and then both will win. Because it doesn't make a difference if I was right or you were right. The main thing is what is right. And we're both arguing for the same purpose. That's machlokas l'shem shamayim. What prevents that? Chazal say, Hakina v'hataiva v'hakovod motzi'in es ha'odah min ha'olam. Jealousy taiva, right, desire, and kovod take a person out of the world. There's all different opinions what it means out of which world. But I think it means it takes you out of society. You can't be a team player if you have these things. Kina, jealousy, is predicated on the fact that I'm not happy being me. Right? You know, the Aseres HaDibros, so it's Osachmo, Eishes Reyecho, Veshoro, Vechamoro, don't covet your neighbor's wife or his donkey. It never bothers you that the Torah uses the same verb for wanting your neighbor's wife and your neighbor's donkey. It l'chora is not the same feeling. It's not the same emotion. Unless there's something very right about the donkey, or very wrong about the wife, or very sick about the guy. How can the Torah use the same verb to wanting your neighbor's wife and your neighbor's donkey? The idea is, jealousy, coveting, is not I want the thing for its merit. That could be a different idea. I want it because it's yours. The Gemara says, Rekev atzomos kina, it's a pasuk in Mishlei. Kina, jealousy, rots your bones. And on that, Chazal say, what you want, you won't get, and what you have, you lose. It's not a punishment. Jealousy means I'm not happy being me. I want to be you. And in order to be you, I need everything you have. It's not because I need the things for their own intrinsic value. I want it because I want to be you. And I'm not happy being me. And therefore, what you have, what you want, you won't have. You can't be somebody else. And what you have, you'll lose because it'll atrophy. You won't bring out your own talents, abilities, and capabilities because you don't appreciate who you are. So somebody who doesn't appreciate who they are and what they can contribute and only are looking to be somebody else can't be a team player. Somebody who is interested only in taiva, in desire, fulfilling their own needs, can't be a team player. The taiva, you've got vakish nikra. People want to be alone. They don't want to share the pie with anybody else. They want the whole pie for themselves. And even though there are avers that you need other people, you want to rob a bank, you can't do it on your own. You need a lookout, and you need a getaway car or whatever. But that's not achdus. That's manipulating other people for you, because after you get what you want, they fight it out until one of them is alive and the other ones are all dead. So people who are interested only in bottom line, what's in it for me, can't be team people. And COVID, if you're looking for COVID, you can't be a team player. A shortstop who wants all the COVID is not going to throw it to first base. He wants to run and tag the guy out himself because he doesn't want to share the glory with anyone else. He can't be a team player. And that's why Chazal say that if you see one of these three things in a dream, you should know that Shalom is going to come into your life. What are they? A river, a bird, and a pot. There's a book by Rabbi Feldman about this. What I'm telling you has nothing to do with that book. Much shorter, not doing the book. I think what it means is the following. These three things counteract Kina, Taiva, and Kavod. How so? A river has tremendous force. You can use it to run electricity, tremendous force, water power, as long as it stays within its boundaries. If it overflows its boundaries, it's a flood. If you see a river, that combats Kina. Don't be jealous. Don't try to go outside of your realm. Realize within yourself what kind of power you have. That combats jealousy. A bird is very light. Kavod comes from the word kaved, heavy. In the 60s, there was a slang, right? Heavy. That's a heavy idea. He's a heavy person. Today it has other connotations. Heavy means somebody who occupies a space. You can't just move them around. Giving kavod to somebody means you consider them important. You can't just push them around. A person who's looking for kavod says, I'm not yielding to anybody. I occupy a space. You go around me. I'm too important. A bird combats. Birds are very light, very flexible. You want to be in the tree, the bird will go on the ground. You want to go on the ground, the bird will go in the tree. A bird is the opposite of kavod. So that combats kavod. The pot combats taiva. What's taiva? Taiva is, bottom line, I'm not going to do it unless there's something in it for me. You have fire and water. If there's a lot of fire and a little bit of water, the fire will boil away the water. If you have a lot of water and a little bit of fire, the water will put out the fire. But if you put the water in the pot and put the pot on the fire, the pot becomes a catalyst that enables the fire and water to work together for cooking. What does the pot get out of it? Burnt. Sometimes you have to be a pot. And in order to bring people together, even opposites, you have to get burnt a little bit. You don't gain anything from it. But you are enabled fire and water to work together. That goes opposite of taiva. Taiva is, I'm not going to do it unless there's something in it for me. So if you see these three things in a dream, each one combats one of the things that takes a person out of the world. That makes sure that he can't have shalom. If you work on these three things, working against taiva, against kima, against kavod, then there's a better chance that people are able to live in the world together, especially if people appreciate who they are and what they are and what their mesorah is and don't feel threatened by people who are different than them and are able then to accept the fact that there can be many different drachim to the Ribono Shel Olam, and again, not saying, you're okay, I'm okay, that's not what I'm talking about. You may not be 100% okay, I may not be 100% okay. So you criticize me, I'll criticize you, because we're all in this together. That's healthy. But for people to think that unless it's my way, it doesn't exist, it's off the circle, that's very unhealthy. So with all of that, that is what Achdus is, and being Achdus means being part of a tzibur, being part of a community. And just ending with a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah says, "Atifrosh min atzibur." Don't separate yourself from the community. And then Hillel went on and said four other things. The Al-Tamin ba'atzmecha at yomoscha, don't trust in yourself till you die. The Al-Tobin is chavercha at shtagiyah l'komo, don't judge other people till you come to their place. The Al-Tomer al-Dover she'iepsha l'shmoa she'sofa l'shama, don't say on something that can't be heard, that in the end it'll be heard. And don't say l'sh'efne eshne Hashem esol shipana, don't say when I have time I'll learn, because maybe you won't have time. All beautiful things, what they have to do with each other. So I was thinking that Hillel only said one thing. He said, don't separate yourself from the community. And then he gave four reasons why people think they should separate themselves, why they can't be part of a community. First reason, I don't need a community. Communities are for weaklings, people who need a support system. But I'm strong enough on my own, I don't need a support system. Comes along Hillel and says, Al-Tamin ba'atzmecha yom mosfa. No one is so strong that they don't need support from other people. Everybody has to be part of a community. Don't believe in yourself till you die. Second reason people don't want to be a part of a community, because they say, you know, I'd love to be part of the community, but I've never found a community yet that's fit to be part of. They're all a bunch of idiots. Right? This one's no good and that one's no good. And comes along Hillel and says, you may be right, but don't make that decision from afar. First get close, be part of the community. See people up close up. You may find out that they're not so bad. They're not as bad as you thought they were from afar. You may think they're worse. But don't make that decision from afar. First be part of the community, come into their place, and then make the decision. Next reason people say, I'd love to be part of the community. And I give people good advice. I've always given the community good advice. I never accept my advice. So why would I want to be part of a community with a bunch of idiots who don't accept my good advice? On that, Hillel said, Al-Tomer al-Dover she'i-epshar l'shmoa she'sofa l'shama. Don't say on something that can't be heard. Maybe your advice is not good. Don't say, well, in the end they'll see I'm right. Maybe in the end they won't see you're not right. Maybe you're not right. Maybe the reason they don't accept your advice is not that good. You think that whatever you say is fine. Maybe it's not like that. Don't say I'm something that can't be heard, that in the end they'll see I'm right. And lastly, people don't want to be part of a community because it's time consuming. Because I have things to do. I have my family, I have Torah, right? I have mitzvahs to do. If I come to Malava Malkus like this, you know, I'm taking time off from very important things. Al-Tomer l'ch'she'etne eshne. Don't say that if I don't have to do with the community, and I have all that extra time to deal with my personal things, that I'll have time to learn, and I'll have time to do mitzvahs. No. Just like a person has to give tzedakah from his money, he has to give from his time, the Moshe Feinstein says, to other people too. And therefore, if you think that you're going to gain by taking time that should be given to the community, and you're going to benefit from it, the Rav Moshe will see to it you don't benefit in that time. Don't say when I have time, because I don't donate my time and contribute my time to the community. I have plenty of time to do very important things. Shemalosi Pana, God won't let you use that time if you're using it at the expense of the community. So those are the four reasons why people don't want to be part of the community. And Hill tells me none of them hold water. And therefore, I'll tip us from that tzibur. Be a communal person. You have to take care of your own personal needs too, but don't neglect being part of the community also. And if you work on all of these things, the king of the tribe of the covenant, and understanding and appreciating who we are and what our derech is, and not feeling threatened by other people, right, and not using the excuses of not wanting to be part of that team, which is called the tzibur, then Klal Yisrael will be a lot better. And the way to do it is not by fixing up the world. If every person works on themselves, little by little, the world gets fixed up. I once heard a story, this is really a beautiful story at a graduation. It's not a chazal, just a story I heard from a valedictorian. at a graduation. So there was once a man who was reading a magazine, and his little four-year-old was bothering him incessantly. He couldn't make headway in the magazine. So he noticed that one page in the magazine was a map of the world. So he tore it out, tore it into 20 little pieces, and he told his four-year-old, this is a map of the world, it's a puzzle. Go put it together and don't come back to me till you finish. Now he knew the four-year-old doesn't know what the map of the world looks like, so he's going to have to match the tears, the configuration of the tears to put it together. It's going to take hours. So he figured it's a few hours now, peace and quiet, to finish the magazine. 15 minutes later, the child comes back. I finished. I put the puzzle together. He says, impossible. There's no way you could have put it together in 15 minutes unless you knew what the picture looked like. And you don't know what the picture of the world looks like. He says, no, come see. Goes, and on the glass top of a coffee table, the map of the world is put together perfectly. He says, wow, a genius. 4 years old, you must have known what the picture of the map of the world looked like to put it together so quickly. He says, no, it was really easy. See, on the other side of the page, the picture of a person. I just put the person together and the whole world fell into place. We'll put the person together and Mitzvah Hashem, the world will fall into place and we won't have to give any more drushes about Shalom and Achdus. Good night.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Lev, that wonderful drasha. People can fill out the participation card at the back of the back table there. And I hope you enjoyed the evening. And that's it. Here we also are the Achdus. Tomorrow morning, people are invited, whoever wants to, will be staying by Barry's class, and whoever wants to have a private session with Rabbi Lev, please phone me up or phone Barry up. 9 to 11 will be around. You or some other people want to have a private session with Rabbi Lev, but Bruchim Abayim, all welcome. So I wish you all, and thank you very much.